There's more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the Law of Attraction. This is the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 41 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today is July 30th, 2016. We know that our reality is shaped by our beliefs. We have a lot of very beneficial beliefs, but we also have some that are limiting. We know that in order to become a vibrational match to something we want, we have to reduce the intensity of our limiting beliefs and raise the intensity of beneficial beliefs. This alters our vibration and creates a new reality. So do these limiting beliefs really restrict the amount of money that flows into our lives? Can we create more money simply by realizing that our limiting beliefs cause a blockage? If that's the case, how do we identify our limiting beliefs around money? Today's question comes from Wendy, and we'll see how Joshua explains the concept in more detail. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Finizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
And Michael Cudson. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Gary.
And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
How's everyone doing today?
Awesome.
Great.
Good.
It's a really nice Saturday morning here. We sold our house yesterday.
And bought the new house. Mazel tov.
Yeah. We're still in it. We get to stay until September 30th, but everything went smoothly. It was perfect. Unbelievable.
So it actually closed?
It closed. No problems. Everyone was happy.
Boy, that's not a closing in New York.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to struggle with closings and have people walk out on them sometimes. And now I just don't care. Whatever happens, happens. And everything just seems to go smoothly all the time. I never have people backing out of contracts or walking away. But this house is a special house, so whoever got it was lucky.
So where are you going?
Just about a mile away. We sold this house and are doing – what we did was when we bought this house, it was a complete wreck. Just had been – you know, it was the house built in the 40s, and the same family had lived here since the early 60s. So it was basically the original house exactly as it was built in 1947. They didn't do a thing. In fact, it was the same stove that they had from that era. And so we totally gutted it from – everything. There was not one thing left except for the studs. So new outside, new inside, new everything. And even changed the floor plan. And so we lived here for 2 years and then found this house and we're going to do the same thing in that house. We'll live there for 2 years, then we'll find another house and keep going.
Well, is the new house part of the Truman administration too?
No, it's actually built in the 80s. It's the most modern house we've ever owned in our marriage. We've never owned a house that was built after the 80s.
Wow.
But that. In fact, other houses
you're dedicated to the Reagan administration.
For this house, right.
Yeah. Yeah, where our house is the Carter administration.
80 to 88, right. Yeah, so we're in the Reagan administration. One day,
that's the way you have to date houses. You have to date them by who was president.
Yeah, so one day we'll hope to be in a... Hillary Clinton house, not a Bill Clinton house. Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead. And Kyla, do you want to read the quote of the week?
Sure. Let me pull it up.
This is all about limiting beliefs this week.
And I like this picture.
Yeah. I'll explain the picture too after.
Okay. You have the ability to choose any thought, and you also have the ability to choose any belief. Beliefs are not made in stone. They are illusions. Most of your beliefs have never really been tested. You carry with you a set of beliefs based on chance encounters and what other people have told you. Since they've been with you a long, long time, they've gained momentum. You believe your beliefs are true, but most are not. Now is the time to challenge your limiting beliefs and shore up your beneficial beliefs. Joshua.
Yeah, and that's something about if you have a beneficial belief, then you can know that that's true. And if you have a limiting belief, then you can know that that's false. Right?
Well,
now, yeah, go ahead.
What's the difference? I mean, as long as it's beneficial, what does it matter if it's true or not?
Because if you have a doubt that it's true, then it's not as intense as if you knew it was true.
Well, I was just saying, if something feels good when you think about it, then I don't know. I'm just thinking that it's how it serves you, and if it
right.
feels good, it's serving you, and it really doesn't matter if it's true or not. It's just
well,
as long as you think it's true, and
that's what I'm saying. It's not that it really is true, because nothing is absolute.
Right. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. So what it matters is that you believe fully that it's true.
And embrace
that it's a fact, right? Yeah. And you embrace it. And you're like, yeah, that is true. That's 100% true. And you find evidence to prove it's true.
Which you will through the law of attraction.
Which you will the more you believe is true. So exactly right. So your beliefs are these beacons that attract things to you. And if you have a beneficial belief, you're going to get more of that. And that's going to prove itself to be true to you over and over again. And if you have a limiting belief and you believe strongly in that, that's also going to be proven to you over and over again. And that's why it's so important to really analyze your beliefs and reduce the intensity of limiting beliefs. And when they say reduce the intensity, it means that you can't just get rid of a limiting belief. You can't erase it. It's always there. Nothing can ever be destroyed. But you can reduce the amount that it affects you. And, you know, and that's what, you know, probably the main Joshua tool is in analyzing a belief and reducing its intensity by proving it's false.
And paying a lot less attention to the limiting belief.
Yeah. And when it comes up, realizing, doing the work really quickly in your head, that it is a false belief. Yeah. So this picture is Sean Callahan, who's a phenomenal artist in Key West, really good friends with Deborah Jo, and he's done a lot of the Joshua art. So if you see any artistic pieces, a lot of that's him. And here he is in Key West with someone that you'd, you know, that is not dressed as you would believe them to be dressed. So you can, you know, what we do a lot of times in our judgment is judge whether that's appropriate, inappropriate, right, wrong, all that stuff. And we're just canceling out a lot of this stuff based on these limiting beliefs that we have. So that's what the show is about today.
So you're saying Sean is the guy with the beard.
That's right.
Yeah. Just to be clear.
The way he's looking at the other person is fun.
Is longing, like longingly?
Or like surprisingly.
Let's explain for the people who can't see it what the image is.
Okay, go ahead, Michael. You explain this.
Serves me right for opening up my big mouth. There is a gentleman who is seated with a big beard. What appears to be a person on his lap. Uh-huh. Yeah, it appears to be either a transvestite or a transgender female.
Uh-huh.
With a big tattoo on her arm, and kind of a shocked look on her face.
Yeah, I think Deborah Jo took that picture actually.
Wow.
So,
cool.
But okay. So, limiting beliefs sort of stop the way we can get what we want. And you see this all the time. Like when we were buying this house, I had this belief that there's no way we're going to find a house that is in the area we want, owner financing. It was right after the financial collapse. We couldn't get a normal mortgage. So Lily says, let's just find a house with owner financing. And me as a realtor knows that's just not going to happen. There's of all the houses in Palm Beach County, maybe there's 10 that offer that. And when they do, the rates are really high or they want a lot of money down or it's way overpriced. So we're not going to find a house in our neighborhood that's priced right and get financing that is reasonable. So I said, okay, I'll look. And boom, this house came up. It was right there. It was just put on the market like 3 days before that. And it was exactly in the neighborhood we wanted, the exact style of house we wanted, with the absolutely a great price and a totally reasonable interest rate. It was 7% interest only. With, at that time, it was like very little money down too. So it was unbelievable. And the guy who owned the house was the most super nicest guy in the world, always willing to help out. He let us borrow his truck in the for stuff, and it was amazing. Lived just down the street from us. So, thank God Lily didn't have the same limiting belief that I had, but this is a blockage. When you believe that something can't happen because it doesn't appear to be, you know, possible or coming from the right direction, this is when we limit ourselves.
Well, you must have been open to some degree, otherwise you wouldn't have found it.
Right. I was open enough to do that.
There was a crack.
Right.
There was a crack. And it was basically, I was just humoring Lily.
Well, you know what? Lily had enough belief for the two of you.
Right. She did. So she was inspired to even ask me to do it. And she had no limiting beliefs around there. And certainly, I could have been inspired the same way. But if that inspiration had come up, I might have would have said, no, that's not possible. So even when Lily brought it up, and she's like, no, just look. I said, okay, I'm going to prove to you that I'm right. And then, thank God, I didn't, you know, have to defend my persona. I could say, oh, look, here's one here. And thank God she didn't say, see, I told you you were an idiot. All right. This is a rather long question, but it really goes to what we're talking about today. And you guys want to just jump right into that?
Yeah.
Sure.
Michael, you want to read the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Dear Joshua, I have been presented with a huge manifestation event. For the past couple of months, I have been searching for an answer as to whether or not real estate is my path. As I wrote before, I have had a couple of big deals go south on me in the beginning of this year. Now my daughter-in-law's father comes along and asks me to help him purchase a $6.9 million home. This is all well and good, but I know this man to be a fraud in the true sense of the word. He sent me bank statements stating he has $10 million in the bank. I called the bank. He does not have the funds he says he has. He has falsely represented himself to me. The man owes money all around town. He skated out on his responsibilities to his daughter and ex-wife upon divorce. He's never paid the alimony or child support, college tuition he was supposed to pay, and he has tied me under confidentiality to not mention any of this to his daughter. I don't believe the man is legit, and I don't want to jeopardize my relationship with my daughter-in-law. I have seen in the past how he manipulates everyone around him to believe his story, and I know the stories to be false. I know too much about his history, and he has hurt too many people dear to me to want to help him. If he has that kind of money, there are many people he needs to make whole. I don't like the guy. I don't trust the guy, and he has caused much heartache for those who I love. I know there is no way he has the money he says he has, and yet I considered going through the motions with him because of the thought of a big paycheck. I realize this is a big opportunity for me to grow. I so want to move on with this chapter of my life. Why is it so hard for me to cut this guy loose? I know this is his reality. For him, it is truth, and all is good. How do I honor my integrity, my honesty, and don't allow him to drag me into this? What is the manifestation event for me? Regardless of what others have let him do to them, whatever part he has played in their manifestation events, I want to understand what this has to do with me and my beliefs. What is for me in this scenario? I realize this is a big one for me. I feel like I'm being played, taking advantage of, put in a tough spot with my family. The only reason I even considered working with him was the money. Basically selling my soul to the devil for the almighty dollar. I now know he doesn't have the money for the purchase. What I want to know is why I can't let go of this quest for money. Why can't I relax and know that Source will take care of me? Thank you. With love and gratitude, Wendy.
Well, she's obviously really intertwined with this guy and has a lot of history. But I had a situation when I was first starting out in real estate, and I was sitting in an open house on this foreclosure. And this guy comes along. He's sort of ragged and beat up, and he's driving this old Cadillac. And he walks around the house, and there were a couple other people there I was showing the house to. And it was just a, you know, little $80,000 foreclosure property. And I didn't really pay him any attention at all. Totally judged him by the, you know, what he looked like. And then he ends up buying the house and bought like 30 other houses from me. And he had owned a bank in Ohio with a whole bunch of branches and sold it for, you know, $30, $40, $50 million was his part of it. You know, so, but you had no way you could tell that from looking at it. I didn't even ask him until like the fifth house he bought where all the money came from. And he would, he and his friend would fix them up himself. So he'd go in there and he'd paint and pull out the carpet and do the cabinets and all that stuff. And for him, it was just, you know, what he was doing in his retirement. But you never really know. And when the universe gives you an opportunity, well, there's, it's doing it for you. There's something in this that's happening. And obviously, in this case, she's so much more involved with him and the family, and there's a lot more to it. But it's interesting that you sort of, before even getting started, you sort of put up these defenses to it. If you imagine, well, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this case is somewhat different because in this case, she knows that the guy is a fraud.
Okay. So, do you really know anything? You know, is it possible to know anything?
Well, but she did her, between what she had already learned and doing her own diligence, she knows this guy doesn't have the $10 million. So she, separate and apart from any, her personal experiences and what she can learn from it, as a pure, if she wants to stay in the real estate business, she has, and I'm speaking as a lawyer now, she has obligations to everyone involved not to be part of a fraud.
Okay. So, Kyla, you were thinking about...
Don't let Michael speak anymore. I just sipped my lips. Well, now I will.
You were talking about moving to another town.
Yes.
On Wednesday. So what was that conversation about?
my limiting beliefs. so I have this idea in my head, have had for a while, of buying a house. And now I'm in a situation where I need to move rather quickly and just didn't see how that could possibly work out. So Joshua, much to my chagrin, encouraged me to let go of some of those limiting beliefs.
Which was the limiting belief to let go of?
That owning a home is the only way that I can feel like I have a home was a big
right, one. Right, exactly. Yep.
So once I let go of that night, I got online and was still skeptical, but was looking at apartments for rent. And not feeling, I was inspired to do it, but I wasn't really liking anything that I was seeing. And then I had the thought, oh, I should look in the sublease section because I'm not wanting a long-term.
Okay, so where'd that thought come from? What was the thought? That was inspired.
Yeah.
Thought, right?
Yeah. And I realized that I was like, I totally just attracted that thought. This is going to be good. And then I saw the first one that my eyes went to was a sublease, and it said in the title, like, ready for a family, which. And so I clicked on it, and it was 10 o'clock at night. But I texted the girl and said, hey, I know it's late. I'm sorry, but if you have a few minutes to chat, I'd love to talk to you. Talked to her. She was great. Went and looked at it yesterday, and it's an apartment, but it's going to work for my needs. So.
But the cool thing is it's a sublease, so now you have until whenever that's over to find a house. And everything you need to get wrapped up can get wrapped up, but also you get – your kids in school and all that stuff too.
Yeah. And one of the things that Joshua said was, you don't know how it's all going to play out. Maybe you move into this community and you find friends there or friends for your kids. So when I was starting the guy, there are several families with kids like around the same age as mine. So
yeah.
That was neat.
Right. And so just to limit yourself by saying, I have to own, that's how it is. Like, rent's going to be more expensive than owning. It doesn't make sense to rent, all this stuff. You're just putting this limitation towards what the universe is bringing you.
Yeah.
So I did a thing too a friend of Lily's mother was her friend's like nephew was in town looking at houses. And so I'm like, this is some guy going to look at houses and everything, and I know he's not going to buy anything, and you know, it's just one of those things. I said, well, let's just go and see what the universe is going to do with this. So I end up researching houses in this neighborhood, this area he wanted, Singer Island, and show him like seven houses. And from the very moment, super nice guy, just knew he was going to buy anything. But I said, something's going to turn out with this. And the third house we show was a foreclosure, and I ended up buying it. And I would never have found this house had it not been for him. You know. So
are you saying that Wendy, even though she knows the guy doesn't have this money, she could have possibly, something came from looking at these million-dollar homes, and I have no idea what, but it sounds like she's resisting it.
Well, from a realtor point of view, that, like, I would love to have an excuse to look at million-dollar homes. And, you know, and to get to know the houses better is a big deal, too. And now you can, you know, just get more education, and maybe you'll bump into another realtor. Maybe the listing agent will be there with you, and maybe start some relationship that way. You never know what's going to happen.
But I think technically she didn't engage with the guy, so she's not officially under contract, right? If this is just verbally happening initially.
There's no contract with a buyer. You're just showing buyer's properties. You're a transaction broker. You're not the buyer's broker.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, sure, she can write up an offer, get it under contract, and then the guy doesn't have the money to close and makes her look like an idiot. But, you know, that happens all the time. Especially the more expensive the home, the less likely you're going to get a pre-qualification letter and all this stuff, too. If it's a $500,000 house, you've got all this stuff ahead of time before you show them anything. But if it's in the multi-millions, you can't really get that information because there's really a lot more to it than that, you know. People just don't get pre-qualification letters for $6 million houses, and especially if they're buying cash, you know. And you're not going to, you know, generally get a bank statement ahead of time. You might get it before you read the contract.
Although this guy presented a bank statement that was a fraud.
Well, how did we – okay. Well, we'll just assume that she was able to find that out as a realtor. Who knows? And maybe he has other accounts, you know, and other things too. So – there's a lot more to it. But anyway, what I'm saying is that there's this belief about him, and she's we'll see what Joshua says, but my personal opinion is something can come out of this without having to stop it right in the button.
It happened for a reason. So
it's happened for a reason, exactly right.
Okay.
And it happened to her. Okay, and let's go ahead and see what Joshua says.
Okay. Dear Wendy, what a wonderful manifestation event for you. The purpose of this manifestation event is to allow you to uncover some of your unlimiting beliefs, which are holding you apart from all that you want. In this case, what is the limiting belief, and what is the irrational fear at the bottom of it? You have two irrational fears. They are both the fear of loss. If you do not work with him, you might lose out on a nice commission. If you do work with him, you might get tangled in a mess and lose your reputation. Both fears are irrational. You cannot die as a result of anything related to this situation.
So a rational fear is one where you could die or be injured from it, so petting a lion or jumping off a cliff. And an irrational fear is, you know, being afraid to ask someone on a date or public speaking or something like that where you can't die.
Right. Okay. Why did you attract him as a buyer when there are thousands of other buyers out there? It is because you need to move through this fear, this limiting belief, this issue of yours. You are still stuck on the concept of right and wrong. You are still judging, not loving. Did you know that you are
and you and he
are
yep.
eternally linked? You could not be closer to anyone else on earth. You are a perfect match to him, just as he is. In fact, your inner self doesn't want him to be any different than he is. For you, he is perfect. He's coming at the perfect time, and he's bearing a gift. It's not a big commission. It's something far more valuable than that. Acceptance.
Right. So when you judge someone as wrong, as being wrong, you're just focused on this limiting idea of right and wrong. You're attached to this concept that people should be a certain way. You're not understanding that they're the way they are for a reason.
And that's a lifelong thing that everyone just has. That you go through, and for this to come along and snap you out of it is a radical change, I would call it.
Yeah, and she's ready for it, though.
Yeah.
She's done some work here. Yeah,
definitely.
I love how these answers, I mean, that's obviously, you know, written for her, but when you sent this email out with this question, I really needed to see that paragraph right there. I was not accepting someone in my life, and I really benefited from that reminder.
Yeah.
Right, but she can address it in different ways. She can choose she can choose whether or not to deal with him, knowing that or believing that he's a fraud, and saying, "Okay, I accept you anyway." Or she can choose to say, "You know what? You came to me. It's a gift for me to learn how to deal with somebody who I don't want to work with, because that's my preference."
Okay, so Donald Trump says he's worth so many billion dollars, right? But he puts $3 billion price value on his name. So are you calling Donald Trump a fraud, Michael?
Yes.
And that's fine as long as you know it's not wrong, you know? Because to create your own reality means you're saying what you want to say about yourself. You know, that's what's real. It's not what other people believe is real about you. Yeah.
Well, this kind of gets into Stephen Colbert's concept of truthiness.
Right. It is. That's what this is all about. This is what we're talking about here all the time, is presenting yourself in the way you want to be, not the way you really are. All the time. Yep. And that's saying, "Oh, I will be a billionaire once I make $1 billion." Because billionaires don't become billionaires by making $1 billion. They become billionaires by having the mindset of a billionaire beforehand, and then they attract the billions. That's how me and Steve did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Why are you laughing, Kyla? We're creating our reality over here. It's truthiness.
Yes, but the concept was that it's satirical when Stephen Colbert says it.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go into the next paragraph.
Did you know that you are an eternal, limitless being of pure positive love and acceptance? Are you being that right now? Are you loving him and accepting him for who he is? Or do you bring some fear-based judgment to all of this? Do you think he is wrong? Don't you realize by now that there is no wrong anywhere in the universe, and that he is not wrong either? It's simply your limited perspective getting in the way. You think he should be different than he is, and that would make you feel better, but it doesn't work that way. You feel better first, and then everything will line up for you. It's all up to you. You have all the power over any condition or situation. It's all in your perspective. You can choose the limited perspective, which feels bad, or you can reach for the higher perspective and find relief.
Right. So, it's all about allowing people to be as they are without this judgment, and knowing that they came to you for a reason. And I believe that had you not had this worry about what, you know, might come your way, you wouldn't attract it. So obviously you attracted this guy in this situation for this perfect purpose.
He was the perfect guy for it, because it's like he represents everything that she's kind of despising right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But that's kind of a big one to bite off first, right? You know, you think baby steps, right?
Yeah.
There have probably been other little things, though, that maybe didn't seem as big. I mean, yeah.
Right.
It might be like there might be a lot of little buyers out there that she has. And I'm not saying this is, I mean, this has happened probably to me a lot, where I would discount certain people and, you know, sort of shun them, or say, "Listen, I'm way too busy to work with you," or, you know, "You're never going to buy anything." And, you know,
She said, "Oh, sorry."
Go ahead.
I was. She said at the beginning of the letter that she'd had other deals that fell through, so maybe those were the baby steps, you know, leading up to this guy, because she didn't deal with the stuff after those things happened, and I'm sure she felt negative emotion. You know, maybe that was related. Maybe those buyers were somehow untrustworthy. So
whenever I had a deal fall through, I always blamed everyone else but me. You know, the mortgage broker or the buyer or the seller or something. So much easier now doing these deals.
Well, it's good to – I always fall back on how is the common man, however you want to call it, supposed to know this stuff? It's like you need a Joshua that kind of tells you.
There's – yeah. When you get a lot of these concepts down, it's really life or perspective changing, and that's the whole deal. The change – the way you see everything. It is a radical change in an approach to life by looking at everything as working for you rather than you're trying to, you know, swim uphill?
Right.
Run uphill?
can we say mixed metaphors, folks?
Yeah.
What's incredible about it, though, this knowledge is that you can't unknow it. So you can forget it or choose not to use it or adopt it. But once you know, you know.
Yeah. Really, once you know, you know. And then once you do something the old way, you know that too.
Oh.
You know, it's really obvious. Yeah.
And then all the little aches and pains in your body go away.
Yeah.
Because you're non-resistant.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Also, I think that everyone is relearning this stuff. I think we came into it knowing all this, got these limiting beliefs built up by learning another approach to life. And now the most often heard thing that I hear from people is that it's like they've always known it, or they're hearing something that they always knew.
Yeah.
You know, no one goes, oh, this is like brand new stuff. They go, yeah, this is something I always felt, or I always understood on some level. You know, just remembering it is what people are doing.
I like to say it makes sense.
It
resonates. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. Well, she had a lesson to learn by this guy coming into her life. It still doesn't mean if it doesn't feel right to her, she has to work with him. But what she has to do is understand, is not feel badly about this guy, and instead say, okay, what is my preference? How do I feel about it? And then look at it that way, and making it a big emotional issue for herself.
Let's take a look at this. You have a choice. I feel good about working with you, or I feel bad about working with you, right? I feel bad about working with you. What are you saying when you say, I feel bad about working with you? I have fear. It's the only reason you could feel bad about anything is there's fear involved.
But we always have choices to make, and we go with our preferences.
Right. So what's her preference? Is to sell a $6.9 million house or not? If she was going to articulate her preference in real estate, it would be to sell houses. And here comes a buyer that she judges as wrong. I'm not saying that she shouldn't judge them as wrong. I would say that everyone would judge them as wrong. But we're working through a higher level kind of thinking here, that you can, if you feel bad about this guy, the bad feeling is an indication of a limiting belief, because the bad feeling means that your perspective is different from your inner being's perspective. Your inner being is leading you to everything you want. If you have negative emotion over anything, it's brought on by fear. If you have positive emotion, it's brought on by love. Okay. So in this case, we know the fear is irrational because she can't die in this situation. So her inner self is looking at the situation in one way, and she is taking another perspective. And that feeling of feeling bad is her indication that she's not looking at it the same way her inner self is. And that it's a negative emotion, and her inner self is letting her know that she has a limiting belief based in fear. She's looking at it from a limiting perspective. And at that point in time, right then, you are meant to analyze what you're afraid of. In this case, she's afraid of two things. One, getting tangled up with this guy, screwing up the relationship with her daughter, having a bad reputation, that sort of thing, or losing a commission. Right. So that's why she's torn. On the one hand, she wants to get rid of the guy because she's afraid of what might happen. And on the other hand, she wants to work with them because she's afraid of losing that commission. So at that point, you stop and say, these fears are irrational. They are false. Let's look at what I'm afraid of and let's move through it. Let's move through the fear towards where we're being led. And in this case, it is working with the guy. Now, most people would say, yeah, I'm not going to work with you. And that's fine. And I'll be done with it. Okay. And generally, they probably wouldn't have this level of fear involved. They would say, I'm just not going to do it. It's just not what I'm interested in doing. I got a lot of buyers. Move on to the next one. But for her, it's a big deal because there's a lot of money at stake. And at the same time, she feels bad about him because she has some experience. So this manifestation event is coming to her to show her that if she can move through her fear on this and just play it out, that everything's going to work out. And that's what we'll have to see down the road. But she can't see where it's going to go from here. She just has to sort of have faith. Did I explain that well enough?
No, I thought it was good. It was okay. Like anytime you feel anything negative, you need to examine what's going on there.
Right.
Right. Exactly right. I think that what Michael's saying, like this instance where she could, you know, part of it could be for her to just say, no, I'm not going to work with you. If her limiting belief was like, I can't say no to people or something along those lines in a situation like that, it would be maybe her best course of action to choose not to work with this person because that would be something else that she was, you know, being presented with in order to overcome.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Right.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, going with Kyla's thought, you know, it seems like part of the fear is that she's not going to make money as a real estate broker. So if the fear is both working with somebody like that or the fear is about money, then maybe it's working her way through it to say, you know what, I don't have to work with somebody like that. I will make money no matter what.
Well, and we can see by her statements that she is judging him.
Mm.
Right. We can't say that this is a judgment based on her. We can't say that this is how the guy is. This, what we're looking at here is her personal judgment of people. Well, let's continue on with this, and we can see how it fleshes out here a little bit more.
Okay. It is not about real estate or even money. It is about you finding fault with things that have absolutely nothing to do with you. You can allow everyone to be as they are, or you can fight against what is. Which do you think is the more effective approach to life? All of your struggles, failures, disappointments, unwanted physical conditions, etc., come from fighting against what is by judging what is to be wrong. Let's stop that right now. There is no wrong. There is only preferred and not preferred for you personally, not for anyone else. You don't get to choose what's right or wrong for anyone else.
Okay, so let's go to the next paragraph.
You have two choices, and both choices are right. You can change your approach to this man and see him as right. You can show him homes, write offers, and believe that the universe is working this all out for you. You can enjoy the showings, become familiar with multi-million dollar homes, learning some things along the way, and learning how to disassociate yourself from the results. Do it because it's fun, interesting, and exciting, not for the money. Detach yourself from the money and focus on the interesting part of all of this. Focus on the homes, the other agents, the decorations, the views, the amenities, the neighborhoods, but not the money. This is the approach that will make you more money than you ever dreamed of. This is the way to a financially abundant life.
And what I should say right here is that this roundtable of us is, you know, looking at this question from our human perspectives and thinking what we would do in the same situation. So we don't know Wendy, and we don't know the whole situation which she's going through, but Joshua does understand that, and Joshua's talking to her specifically. But we're like sort of dissecting this to get what we would get out of that same situation here too. So in this one sentence was really interesting too, because a lot of people go into real estate for the money, but if you're doing anything for the money, you're just going to be pursuing something that's going to be always difficult. But if you're doing it because you love looking at houses, you love negotiating deals, you love, you know, listings and things like that. You love the real estate, the decorations, the photography of it and all that stuff. Then you sort of take your attention away from the money, and that's how the money comes. If you ever look at who are the, you know, the most successful realtors, it's always relatively the ones who like real estate the most, who like negotiating the most, who like making the big deals the most. And not the person that's just going out for the money. That's a secondary part of it.
Actually, I don't know if I should admit this. I do know Wendy.
And you
she,
do.
And she did say she loved this part where, you know, focus on the homes, the decorations, because she goes, that is one of her passions, and she'd kind of lost sight of that because the money factor had kind of screwed it all up. So
right.
She really appreciated this.
Good, yeah. And you can be as happy showing a $100,000 house or $1 million house. And if you disassociate yourself from the commission part of it, and just let that flow as it flows by your goal being to make a nice, smooth transaction for everyone, then the money just takes care of itself.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting about this, I mean, like Michael was kind of saying, you know, there's a belief that she has an obligation to not go into these deals knowing that this guy's a fraud. So the idea that she could be writing offers for him knowing this, what better way to like challenge your a fear of what other people think of you,
right?
You know, to challenge like an idea of your persona than to do that and just have like ultimate trust that it's all going to be okay because the universe has got her back. It would be something.
And she like I could do that, you know, because I have a lot of experience in this. I don't really care that much. I realize that there's no real downside to it on my part. But Michael couldn't do it because Michael is, you know, is a lawyer and he's really
trained and almost 30 years of telling people not to do something like this.
Right.
So that's a lot of momentum, huh?
And that's why we get these two great perspectives or these four great perspectives on this show. Yeah.
You know, if she's my client, if she's my client, I would chloroform her. I would put her in a room, and I would get trained CIA deprogrammers.
That's what we always talk about, Steve and Sienna. It's like it's always, you know, if Steve worries about Sienna, and it's always like, okay, get that balloon that's in her bedroom, blow it up and stick her in it. That's the only way she's going to be safe. Yeah, her bubble, right?
Right. Actually, to be truthful, I give my clients advice, and I tell them what I suggest, what the risks are, and at the end of the day, they do what they want to do, and often don't bother to listen to the very expensive advice that they paid for from me anyway.
Yep.
How much is your has your advice changed since getting into spiritual stuff and studying Joshua? Like, does that sneak its way into your lawyerly?
You know what? It's not that it sneaks its way in, but rather I notice it when I change my mind about something. And I can just tell a very quick story that happened 2 days ago. I had a client who, you know, I do trusts and estates and elder law, and we were considering challenging a will, and based mostly on some technical defects in the way it was signed. The person wrote his own will, and he was a stubborn old codger and did it his own way, and there were, you know, he who does his own will is, you know, saving a few dollars up front but costing his estate, you know, thousands of dollars later on, and there were some technical issues. And I told my client, I said, you know, at the end of the day, you probably should settle this matter because the courts are not going to be terribly well inclined to just, you know, to invalidate the will based on some minor technical issues. And something inside of him kept on saying, you know what, I just can't do it. I think there's, you know, I think, you know, even if my uncle meant this, you know, meant to disinherit me, that we should look further. And you know what I said, you know, and I'm just not ready to settle at this point. I said, you know what, why don't I spend some of your money? Let me do research and let me see, based upon these technical defects, what the your likelihood of success is. And he said, okay. So, you know, I did a couple of hours worth of research at $500 an hour. And at the end of the day, I said, you know, you have a damn good chance of winning, far greater than I originally expected.
Yeah.
So on Friday, I had him come into my office. He signed objections to the will. I was going crazy on some other estate litigation. So I said, I don't even have time to deal with this. Here's the directions to the courthouse. Go file it. It has to be filed today. And we will send notification out to the opposing counsel the way, and we will get it all done today. And you know, he has a good case.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he felt inspired to contest it, and then you saw the situation going in the direction instead of fighting up, you know, paddling upstream. You said, "Hey, let's see what happens."
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Instead of swimming uphill.
Right. And you know who's the ultimate winner no matter what?
You.
Me!
That's right.
Because you charge by the hour.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, he plopped down a $10,000 check at my firm, and we'll go from there. And I warned him. I said, this still doesn't mean you're going to win, but the odds are much better than I thought they were.
Okay, let's go on with the next paragraph here.
Your other choice is to politely decline, saying you are not prepared or qualified to assist him with homes in that price range. You could easily refer him to another agent and receive a referral commission in the off chance that he actually buys something. Know that whoever you decide to refer him to will be perfectly capable of dealing with this type of buyer. The other agent will be a vibrational match one way or the other. The other agent will receive the benefit you passed on. We suggest you do whatever fits within your set of beliefs. If you believe him to be untrustworthy, then there is no possibility for any money or any belief-altering benefit. Money could not come as a result of holding on to that belief, and you could not grow in the process of finding fault with who he is. You must get around that highly limiting belief. If not for this buyer, then for all future buyers.
Yeah.
That's big.
So the next buyer that comes along, she may not think that the person's a fraud, but may have this other opinion based on something else. And the idea here is to just know that if someone comes your way, that there's some benefit for it, and to treat them as if they're a gift one way or the other. Mm. Or the other.
It's kind of like I like to look at it like a treasure hunt.
Yeah. What is the gift in this treasure hunt? There is always a gift. Yeah.
That's good. Go ahead.
No. Oh, I was just going to say, from my experience, when I choose to look at someone that way, and it's not the end goal, but I feel like when I change the way that I view someone, my ex, for example, when I started looking at him as a gift, realizing that he was presenting me with all of these things, opportunities for me to grow, the person that he was sort of shifted, or the version of him that I was attracting shifted to a more positive one in my eyes.
Well, it totally shifts, and that's what's really happening is you're creating the other person.
Right. Yeah. So then what's interesting about that is when it sort of reverts, then I'm like, wait, what?
Yes.
Because your limiting beliefs are going back.
I've had the revert too. It's almost like two different people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think we've all run into people who raise our resistance, or at least who make us raise our resistance.
And they are our teachers, and a lot of times they're our closest friends and our closest enemies and our mates and children and parents, for sure.
And coworkers.
Parents.
Yeah. One of the things that Joshua said to Wendy and has said to me before is, you know, pointing out that all of these people, especially the ones that get, you know, your feathers raised, we are eternally linked to them. And when we meet in the non-physical, we'll thank them and they'll thank us. That's something that I have to remind myself of constantly when it comes to my ex. I asked him to be this way.
That's right. And you guys came in going, we're going to play this game. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, be married, have children, be tied for the rest of our lives. And then, you know, want different things.
Right.
And Steve's got a neighbor who's very close to him.
Uh-oh.
Eternally linked. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of our neighbors really still avoid the guy, and there's you know, gossip and all that other stuff. And I just disengage because I don't know if I can just come out and say, oh, I love the guy. What are you guys talking about? They're like, what? So I only got one more paragraph here, so I'll just slam it here. You must also decide if you are interested in real estate. Are you passionate about the many different aspects of real estate? Do you buy home design and architectural magazines? Do you watch the TV shows? Do you love making deals, looking at new homes, or doing research? Where does your interest lie? Is it just the money? If so, you are trying to effort your way to money, and therefore you are going it alone. Do not do anything for the money. Do it because it is enjoyable. With love, Joshua.
Yep, and you can make anything enjoyable too. So even if it's like lawyer stuff, you can make that enjoyable.
No, not lawyer stuff. That's the one thing in the universe.
It can be. It can be mundane and other and aggravating at times too.
You enjoy it,
but I try to focus on the good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I try. Look, yesterday I had not only to deal with that guy who was challenging the will and where I had to basically give him the directions to the courthouse.
Yeah, he saved like $1,000 just in that one trip.
Well, he did, actually. He probably saved at least $1,000 by doing it himself. But on top of it, one of my colleagues had this emergency where I had to bang out two different complaints very, very quickly, and they were very detailed and comprehensive documents. Let's just put it that way. And I was engaged in laser focus. I didn't eat lunch, but I'll tell you, it was exhausting.
Was it enjoyable?
It's probably satisfying when you were done.
Did you feel like a badass when you were done?
Oh, well, I'm always a badass. You know what? At the end of it, I said, you know, I'm a damn good lawyer. I handed it to my colleague and the client, and I think the client found like two typos in the, each one was a 20 plus page document.
Did you like drop the mic? Here.
I'm tough.
You know, when we talked last week, I got a couple, or Deborah Jo mentioned, we were talking about Kyla's kids and kids in the back seat and stuff like that. And we had dinner with them last night, and our friends are moving to North Carolina, so we had a North Carolina theme. And her son, JJ, who's 21, I guess, he took chicken breasts and cut them in the shape of roadkill. So it was... Because that's what they eat in North Carolina, right? But this kid is so awesome. And he had said to Deborah Jo this week, you know, in my whole childhood, I don't remember you ever saying no to me. And she thought about it. She goes, no, I never said no to you your whole entire childhood. And he just turned out to be this most incredible kid. You know? Because she had this idea that he knew. She said, I always knew that he knew better than I did. Yeah. And of course, his dad probably said no a few times. But Deborah Jo was just the person who didn't say no.
Well, you know, when I when my kids come up and ask, especially lately, if they can do something, I always turn it back on them and I say, well, how do you feel about it? I mean, are you inspired to do this? Is it something that sounds fun? Because if it is, then I feel very confident. Even if it's something that, you know, I think naturally as a parent, you're always like, if my daughter wants to take her motorcycle across the country that she just got, I might feel a little apprehension around that, right? But I can take solace. If she tells me, oh, this is the most exciting, fun thing I can possibly think about doing, then I go, okay, the universe has her back. And
right.
I feel, like, safe, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what you want to do anyways, is you want them to learn to go to their gut, right, and say, well, how do I feel about this?
And realize that they're in a high emotional state of being rather than trying to get away from some sadness or something negative,
But how would you feel, Steve, if she said, you know, I'm interested in this. This kind of excites me, but I'm also scared.
Well, that's kind of where she's at right now. She has the mix. So what I'm telling her to do is just do what you feel comfortable with right now.
Like, and probably get aligned with the excitement part and not with the, you
Yeah.
So, like, figure out the scared part.
She is perfectly aligned with running around the neighborhood right now with her little motorcycle, and I'm like, then just do that.
Right.
Do that. And then you can branch out as you feel comfortable.
Well, yeah. So we have a new place where we're hosting the shows on Podbean. We're getting that up right now. We'll have a player at some point on our website, teachingsofjoshua.com. We'll have a link to Podbean. All the past episodes will be there. And we're getting bigger and better every week.
I like it when you have a little player because you don't have to commit to like subscribing to a podcast. You
know? Right.
You can just do a little sample right there on the website to see if it's if you like it or not.
Yeah. We'll have that up too. Yeah. Cool. Thanks,
Kyle. Will people still be able to get it on iTunes?
Yes.
That'll be going to iTunes and Stitcher.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how cool.
Yeah. And then soon we'll be doing the live Joshua stuff on there too, which is fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I think we should just make that another podcast.
Yeah, there'll be a different podcast. Yeah. And it'll be on the website and then on Podbean and all that.
And then at some point it'd be cool to be able to have live call-ins.
Or to have, like, you know, a meetup or something where people can at least be in the room, so to speak.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, when you like, have it on the internet, anybody can join.
Right.
Otherwise, we have to be in Florida. Who wants to go to Florida?
No. Like what I'm saying, we can do a Google thing.
Oh, right.
Google Hangouts or something.
Hangout. We can do a Hangout, right. Yeah. So that everyone can log in. We can have 20 people instead of what we're doing here is having four or three or four people.
We're going to make that happen.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
That will be.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What's our time looking like?
We are at 56 minutes.
Excellent.
Back in the old days, we'd be like, well, this is perfect.
Oh, we had talked
back
about...
Back in the old days.
The old days.
I was just going to say real quick, we talked about for the Joshua Live stuff, if somebody, like if a listener has a question that they want us to ask Joshua Live, they can send it to us through the website, through the contact section, or send us a message on Facebook, and we'll try to ask it during the live session.
Yep. That's great. And also, you can just ask Joshua a question from the website that can be typed out, sent to you, too. And these don't have to be part of the roundtable discussions, if you're afraid of that. We always ask Wendy, for instance, if we could use a question, and whoever is the question, they give us their blessing ahead of time. So you can ask whatever you want. Don't worry about other people seeing it. You can keep it private. You can put in a fake name or keep it anonymous, whatever you want to do. And that's about it.
Okay.
So think of another topic for next week. This was a fun one. I like the topics about money a lot. And I think we learned some stuff here about don't go for the dollar. Go for the fun.
Mm-hmm.
And until next
week. And then the dollars will come.
Then the dollars will come. Exactly right. And don't limit how they can come. They can come in many different ways.
That's right.
Yep. All right. So you guys have a fantastic weekend, a fantastic next week, and we'll see you here again Saturday. If you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, we'll probably get to use Sunday or Monday next Tuesday too.
Okay.
All right. All right. I will see you guys later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.